I'm Marty Moscowane. Welcome to Radio Times.
You're telling me that the king of a third world country runs around in a bulletproof catsuit? Why don't you ask him yourself? Because he's right outside. Bingo.
My king.
Stop it.
The Black Panther lives.
A war is coming.
That damn car.
Watch me do my.
I hope you're ready, bro.
I'm just getting started.
Let's have some fun.
The much-anticipated Black Panther was the hit movie of this President's Day weekend. What set it apart from other superhero blockbusters is its Black cast, Black director Ryan Coogler, who hired a largely Black crew, and its African setting. It's about T'Challa, Black Panther, played by Chadwick Boseman, the heir to Wakanda, a highly advanced kingdom that has never been colonized and is rich in a rare metal, vibranium. T'Challa gets his superpowers from a plant grown only in Wakanda and must fight to protect his country's natural resources and its place in the world. That is just the skeleton of the story, which is about so much more and features strong women in important roles, including fearless warriors and T'Challa's feisty and super smart sister, Shuri. Well, today on Radio Times, spoiler alert, the making and message of the Black Panther story. And if you haven't seen the movie and you want to, cover your ears. Let me introduce our guests. Here with us in our Philadelphia studio is Ariel Johnson, owner of Amalgam Comics and Coffee House in the Kensington section of Philadelphia. Ariel, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Oh, thank you for having me, Marty.
You're very welcome. And also with us here in our Philadelphia studio is Salamisha Tillett. She's the Robert S. Blank Presidential Associate Professor of English and Africana Studies at the University of Pennsylvania, co-founder of A Long Walk Home. She has been writing about Black Panther. Salamisha, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
I'm honored to be here. Thanks.
You're very welcome. And joining us by telephone is Dawood Enyawile, and he is co-creator of the Brother Man comic series along with his brother Guy Sims. Dawood, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having us.
And Guy, nice to have you with us as well.
Hey, good to be here. Hey, good morning, everybody.
Good morning, everybody, good morning. As well. And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499, the number to join our conversation. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. So it doesn't get more basic than this. Did this movie, Ariel, meet your expectations?
Yes, it blew past my expectations, really. I had no doubt that this was going to be a solid film, but I was not prepared for the emotional impact that it had. I mean, I expected to be overwhelmed with excitement, but once I was in there, I was actually overwhelmed with emotion. I've seen it twice now and already trying to figure out when I can see it again. But the first time I watched it, I cried through most of the movie.
Why? What emotion?
Just different things. Kind of importance of the ancestors and talking about that. And part of that is just, you know, where I am personally, we've had a lot of losses in our family this year. So just the idea of, like, you know, the ancestors still being with you, they're still watching over you, was just very powerful. And, you know, Killmonger's, like, what his end goal was. It's like he was going about it the wrong way, but you understood why, you know, and so kind of him being an African in the diaspora and what that meant, like being Black and American, everything that he went through and how his focus was to kind of equal the playing field for Black people wherever they were. Like, that was overwhelming. To just see an African nation that didn't have its history interrupted and like the fantasy of that, because that, you know, did not happen, you know, so, you know, whether you are on the continent of Africa or in the African diaspora, I feel like those people of African descent have had their history interrupted, and to see a nation that did not happen. And so to see them have like this true sense of self and direction and agency, it was all just overwhelming. And so just I found myself just crying at every point in the movie.
I will pick up on everything that you said there, including Killmonger, who was the rival to Black Panther. For you, Salamisha, what was your response? How did you react to this film?
You know, I was really anticipating it. I guess I wrote a whole piece about the anticipation of the movie for the Times, New York Times. You know, Ryan Coogler is such a wonderful director. And so what I was excited for was him taking yet a new form and format and transcending it and revising it, right? So we go from Fruitvale Station to Creed, and now we have Black Panther. So just watching, as a fan of cinema, just watching a director grow so quickly and so magisterially before our eyes, I think is pretty exciting. And I also think with Killmonger, and we're going to talk about that more, but the relationship between Michael B. Jordan and Ryan Coogler as director and actor, I think we can think about this as part of like the trilogy of their relationship, of their artistic relationship, and Coogler's autorial vision. And so, yeah, I mean, I guess what I thought I would experience was this kind of like amazing all-star cast of Black actors, Ruth Marcus doing the design in terms of the costuming, and Coogler behind the camera. That we knew, but I didn't know how complicated and morally ambivalent in some ways the political ideology and the political imagination of the film would be. I think that was the part that really struck a chord with me. And I was sitting next to my partner the whole time, and we just kept on looking at each other at different lines. We're like, oh, wait, they went there? Oh, that's what they're bringing up? Oh, that's it. Wow, I can't believe that. So I guess I think for me, and I put this on Facebook, it's almost like not since Mookie threw like the trash can in the window and Do the Right Thing, have we seen such a riveted debate amongst at least African Americans or, you know, children of the diaspora around what the ending means.
Right.
And so I think that's good art if it can produce conversation, debate, and it's not clear if T'Challa or Killmonger or Nakia, I mean, I think there's one heroine really in the movie, but or a couple of heroines and one real moral vision, but there's all these competing ideologies and debates, and I think it's producing that in the real world, and I think that's really fascinating. So that's what good art can do. And so, yeah, here we go. Art
here we
as
go.
Blockbuster film. So.
And even more to talk about. Dawood, do you want to weigh in on this as well? Your reaction, your thoughts?
Well, I think I might have a different take in terms of, you know, was it anticipated for me? You know, I tell people I was not anticipating the film. And I think this is rooted in my history and what I have been, I guess how I observed the comic book industry as a youth coming up. And, you know, I've been looking more towards, you know, our ownership and us building an institution that can basically rival the mainstream, or, you know, quote unquote, the mainstream productions. So for me, you know, I would check it out as a film, you know, I guess just like the other productions from the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and I would look at it from that perspective. Definitely, I'm always excited to see, you know, the Black actors, the director. I even have friends that worked on the film and the video effects, special effects. And to me, that's definitely something that I want to see more and more of. I'm just looking in terms of us building our own so that we can generate the revenue stream, you know, that comes from this and own the intellectual property that is actually on the screen. So, you know, so I'm coming in this from a different perspective in terms of I'm not necessarily looking at the imagery. I look at the ownership. Then when I saw the film, there's certain things within the imagery that, you know, I could say there's pros and cons. There's definitely some pros in terms of the visual, the things that I visually liked about the film. And then when I look at characters like Killmonger, to me, I see like a common thread in a lot of the Hollywood films where the character who's revolutionary, who wants to make a change and wants to make a change for the underdog, they're usually villainized. And you're usually the one who their master plan does not win. And then we kind of see them as being evil. And so, of course, what happens is their character is kind of over the top where, you know, you really don't want to align with them because they're so over the top. They're not really balanced. So I'll intro it like that.
Well, you know,
we can probably get more.
Absolutely. And obviously Killmonger is someone we need to talk about. Guy, you are last but not least before our break. your response to this film.
Well, I'm glad I'm the one of the four people here who has not seen the film.
Huh.
And I'm just slow to get to movies. But in my mind, I know what Marvel does, and I know they do it well. And I know that the actors, the directors, the only thing they could do wrong is mess up their lines and the cameras falling apart, which would not happen. So I knew it would be a fantastic visual film. But, you know, as a creator, and especially as a creator of a black hero, you know, I'm not hyped about it. And, you know, I just think, hey, it's neat. But like I said, I'm a creator. I'm a co-creator, and we've been doing this for many years. And so I think when I look at the film, I'm thinking beyond the film and what people see on the scene. I'm always looking beyond the screen and where do we as African Americans really fall into the equation.
Sure, and I'm assuming all part of this is what happens next. Just very briefly, Salamisha, only because we're up on a break here, and you mentioned the director, Ryan Coogler, Fruitvale Station, and then Creed, which was about the Rocky story, was filmed here in Philadelphia. He's, I think, 31 years old, mm-hmm. just to underscore what you just said about his, I don't know, meteoric rise mm-hmm. as a filmmaker?
Mm-hmm. Or just his genius, I guess, would be another way of saying it. Right, like, yeah, so do you want me to talk about that more?
You know, make sure people understood that. Yeah. And also this, you mentioned Michael B. Jordan, who's also been, yeah. you know, excuse me, all of those three films.
Yeah.
I'm joking here. We will take a very short break and then get back to our conversation talking about Black Panther. I've been struggling with this for the last month or so, and we will carry on after this very short break, talking with Ariel Johnson, Salamisha Tillett, Dawood Enyawile, and also with Guy Sims about this new film, Black Panther. You've probably heard about it. And you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And do stay with us. We'll be right back.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Artie Moscowane. I've got my voice back, at least temporarily, talking about the film Black Panther, the big hit over the weekend. Here's a scene where Black Panther's little sister, Shuri, played by Letitia Wright, is helping him out.
Hey, look at your suit. You've been taking bullets, charging it up with kinetic energy.
Put around the truck. Ready, go!
You show off.
Another scene from Black Panther. And again, our guests are Ariel Johnson, owner of Amalgam Comics and Coffee House in the Kensington part of Philadelphia. Salamisha Tillett, she's a professor of English and Africana Studies at the University of Pennsylvania. Dawood Enyawile and his brother, Guy Sims, are co-creators of the Brotherman comic series. And I should add that they grew up here in Philadelphia. And I believe that Ariel carries your comics in her store here in Philadelphia. Let's talk about the women in this film. And Salamisha, I'll start with you. You had a piece in The Hollywood Reporter, Black Panther, Why Not Queen Shuri? And she, of course, is Black Panther, T'Challa's sister, and a strong and memorable character.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, for those who follow the comic book, there is a Queen Shuri, so I don't want to say that the film or there won't be one in Marvel film universe. But what I was really interested in is the way in which the conversation about the political ideologies have only come down to like Killmonger and T'Challa. Mm-hmm. And I think
these rivals.
And I think the film offers us a kind of complexity to that through the character of Shuri, but even maybe more so through the character of Nakia, who's arguing very similar things to Killmonger in terms of a kind of revolutionary or radical rhetoric. And so I was interested in, you know, there in African American history and political culture, we often end up with these dyads. So it'll be like Uncle Tom and Nat Turner or Malcolm X and Martin Luther King. And oftentimes the voices of women, but also those who are kind of grassroots organizers, get lost in that. And I thought, oh, this film, while it has these a protagonist and antagonist, they also have a third an option. Right. And this character, Nakia, is someone who we see quite quickly, or we introduce to her as someone who is, you know, under working with or trying to overthrow a kind of Boko Haram-like organization. And so I thought, wow, we have a character who's embodying a Black feminist consciousness, and she's pushing Wakanda alongside Killmonger to be a country that shares its resources as opposed to withholds it. And so I think of her in this revolutionary rhetoric or tradition as well as someone like Killmonger.
Sure.
So,
what I was thinking too is that in a country that had not been colonized, as this country had not been, women are empowered. And I wonder, Ariel, could you speak to that? Did you see it that way?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the you know, though, I mean, to, it speaks that his Imperial Guard is all women. So not that there aren't male warriors and the different tribes that make up Wakanda, but as far as like the Wakandans and who are the warriors in Wakanda, it's the Dora Milaje. Also, his I've seen it translated like wives in training and also wives in waiting, but you know, but they are the protectors of the throne. And I think that just for me as a woman, as a Black woman who loves the superhero genre, who loves action, and so, you know, I can name on one hand the movies that have had a woman, and specifically a woman of color, be the lead in the action. So this movie was just inspiring from, you know, Shuri, even though she's not a fighter in a traditional sense.
It's
you know, she uses her technology. But Nakia is a skilled fighter. I always mispronounce her name, but Danai Gurira's character as the general of the Dora Milaje. It was just like, I was just inspired and walked out of there like, man, I need to get a spear. And again, I think that is it's just powerful because, right, again, just not something you see. And again, you know, these women who are, you know, on the council and speaking up, you know, they're not just, even with T'Challa, they're not blindly following, you know. Danai Gurira's character, she questions him and challenges him when she needs to. And even when Killmonger takes the throne, she challenges him as well. You know, but even though she's loyal to the throne, she will still challenge it when she sees something, you know, amiss in their judgment. And I thought that was just different. You know, you don't get to see that often.
And I actually just want to underscore, what's interesting too is that these aren't characters that are promoting nonviolence, right? Like, these are characters who believe in armed self-defense, and there are women characters who, Black women characters who are alongside the Black male characters who are purporting that. So I guess I think that's really fascinating too, that they're, you know, at least with Nakia and then later on with that, they're fighting to save whether their nation or their people, whatever it is. And I think that oftentimes gets Black women are often penalized in either popular representations or real world for expressing anger and resistance in the public. And so I think that's another feature of the comic book genre, but the way that it manifests itself here, I think, is really interesting and complex.
Dawood, do you want to weigh in on that at all? These powerful, these strong, smart women that we see in Black Panther?
Well, I think the ladies pretty much said it all in terms of the how the characters were portrayed. I think the, you know, like I said, the visuals is definitely something that, you know, we don't see much of on screen. And, you know, especially like natural hair or even, you know, the way sisters were, had they were bald and still were proud and, you know, stood proud and were strong. And I forgot the character's name, that, you know, she plays Michonne. Oh, crap. I forgot her name. But, you know, the main guard.
The general.
Yeah, the general.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You know, her, actually, she was the character that I was drawn to the most in terms of her strength. I felt like she actually carried the film in a lot of ways in terms of her power. And I think, you know, something like to me, those are the types of imagery that just should be the norm. You know what I mean? And that's so for me, you know, I definitely think it's impressive. And you know, like I said, the ladies, they pretty much said it all. I just want to.
Well, I thought it was also interesting that there are only a couple of white characters in this, but one of them, played by Martin Freeman, I mean, he truly is the sidekick.
He is. and again, something, you know, something we don't see. And I think, at least in the theaters that I was in, the crowd reaction when he is with the Jabari tribe, and when they find T'Challa, well, when the Jabari, you know, the Jabari reveal that they have T'Challa, right. and Martin Freeman's character speaks, and M'Baku, the leader of the Jabari, you know, just starts to like bark to silence him, and then because it just kind of saying it is not your place to speak. And again, I think that's interesting because again, especially in films when everything is so white centric and white is the default, even to the point where you know like the white savior and even films that. Like I think of films like The Help, where there are these black characters, but it's still to relate to the story, there has to be a white character to carry us into what's happening with these black people. But in this case, this was not his place to speak, and they made that clear. And they could make that clear without, you know, fear of penalty and things like that. And that was again just a powerful moment, I think, and him having to learn to respect these customs. And again, this is not your place, so you stand there and you stand there quietly
and take orders
while we handle our business. And that was just, yeah, it was just kind of, I'm still processing it.
And I guess also the trick of the film is that you have the CIA operative, CIA director, and we see Wakanda original. Well, we know that Wakanda exists, and then he doesn't believe it exists, right? And so that is a kind of critique of like a white gaze that becomes the primary gaze of the movie viewing audience in general. And yet this movie, because of the nature of Wakanda both being real and yet veiled, it's an interesting, like, as he sees the world through the eyes of those he's now with, there's a lot of like unfolding and deconstruction and things that are happening to his consciousness that are really a critique of like maybe Marvel itself, but also like the way in which Hollywood images are produced and circulated. So I thought it was interesting that he was both like a sidekick and a pretty impotent character. And so there's something to be said, not fully, because, you know, everything comes back together at the UN in the end, and we can talk about that too.
I don't want to give too much away. But yeah.
But it's interesting that he's such a ineffective character in some ways too.
Well, and I couldn't help but thinking, and not to get deeply political here, but it's about a country in Africa, and as we know, the president has talked about countries in Africa using a pejorative, the S countries, and I'm looking at you, Salamish. I just couldn't quite get that entirely out of my mind.
No, I think it's well, we could talk about that in greater detail, but yeah, I mean, just the misrepresentation by the president of the United States of many people in many countries on the African continent, but also like the wrongheadedness and the lack of history and ignorance. And so that becomes the way that's what gets challenged in the film. And then obviously when we build with no barriers, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, I mean, it's a critique of a lot of things, I think. But also it's morally ambivalent. I think we're going to talk about what Wakanda means in that way and Killmonger and what he represents right. as a challenge to some of the glory, how Wakanda is allowed to be glorious for so long. Mm.
Guy, let me just put a question to you since you haven't seen the film, but you and your brother are co-creators of Brother Man comic books. And just, I guess, in a nutshell, who is Brother Man and what makes him a superhero? Do we have Guy? We seem to have lost Guy. Are you there, Dawood?
Yeah, I'm here too.
Oh, okay. Guy, that was a question to you about who is, describe for our listeners Brother Man.
Right, Brother Man is our character that we created back in 1989 and released him in 1990. He is the hero of the city of Big City, which is the city that we created, and actually the entire Big City universe of which we created. He's a lawyer by day, and he's just a man who's felt the need to take the next steps to bring justice to those who feel. They're not getting any justice. I mean, that is a very, very, very nutshell of who the character is. That was the illustrator, and I do all the writing.
And this goes back to 1989, so almost 20 years ago. And I should, as I said earlier, both of you grew up in Philadelphia, went to school here as well. Is Philadelphia a big city?
Well, I'll say Philadelphia has an influence. I'll say it's an influence. A lot of our major cities are an influence, but I think sometimes graphically, maybe you can see some of it if you're in tune with it. But we try to make sure that it's very separate from the reality of Philadelphia.
Let me just read a comment from Brandon who says, I like Marvel Universe films that are focused on one or two characters. I love Thor for its visuals, its humor, and its story. And there is, I'll put this to you, Dawood, there are flashes, moments of humor in Brother Man as well. Excuse me, in Black Panther as well.
What was the question?
About humor in Black Panther.
He's saying, is there humor? Or I guess I didn't understand what the question was.
Well, did you see humor in it?
It didn't. It wasn't really a humorous one. I guess if you compare it to like Thor Ragnarok, they were really coming with a lot of humor in that. This one, there was a couple parts, that'll kind of make you chuckle. But I think for the most part, the underlying theme to it was a lot heavier. So I don't think it was really a lot of room for a lot of humor. Mm-hmm. So, I think there were like some light moments, but I didn't really look at this as humor based.
Mm-hmm. Ariel, did you see that or hear that or that mean anything?
Agreeing, because definitely like Thor Ragnarok is a different movie, and for me in the Thor movie I really enjoyed it because of the humor, because I feel like when I watched the very first Thor it was very dry, and so them bringing that humor into the third movie really just kind of engaged me in a way that I wasn't engaged in the previous films. But Black Panther, there's a lot of content where Thor is more about the spectacle.
Right.
It's just like, oh, it's a superhero movie. There are going to be explosions. There are going to be fights. There are going to be cool villains. But Black Panther, there's actually like commentary there. But even with that, there are humorous parts. In the beginning, when the general tells T'Challa not to freeze, and then he freezes. That was funny. Even when when it is revealed who Killmonger is, and he says, "Hey, Auntie," I bust out laughing. I was like, "Boy, shut up!" But it was just like all those little things. So again, it wasn't joke after joke after joke, but there are all these humorous moments in it. And I think also speaks of the Black experience, because especially as a Black American and the trauma that Black Americans have gone through in America, but we kind of escape with our humor intact. It's like, because that kind of brings a certain balance to like the tragedy around you that you can still kind of laugh and have some joy. So I think it was appropriate that even though this movie was very heavy, you know, that we would still have those moments. Yeah. It's like, you know, their humor is intact, and despite what's going on, you know, you can still find humor and relief in the little small windows.
Did you see it that way, Salamisha?
Yeah. I started thinking about scene with Killmonger. I also think a lot of the humor, the subtle or small humor that we see, is at the expense of Martin Freeman's character, the white character. So there's like this way in which the white CIA agent is the butt of the joke, which right. isn't, you know, but it's not like a funny film. Like I do think it inserts that in moments, but we're supposed, you know, it's doing a lot of multiple things in terms of spectacle as well as trying to get through a subtext of political substance. So.
Like a lot of movies, complicated, many layers. We're going to take a very short break. Talking with Ariel Johnson, owner of Amalgam Comics and Coffee House in Kensington, and talking about the movie Black Panther, had its debut over this weekend and broke some records. And I think it got something like 97% on Rotten Tomatoes, and a big thumbs up from many people in the audience. Salamisha Tillett is the Robert S. Blank Presidential Associate Professor of English and Africana Studies at the University of Pennsylvania, co-founder of A Long Walk Home. Dawood Enyawile and Guy Sims are the co-creators of the Brotherman comic series. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoyne. This is the theme music for the Black Panther TV series created by Stephen James Taylor.
The Black Panther is ready!
We're talking about Black Panther, the comic, the movie, the story. And again, our guests are Ariel Johnson and Salamisha Tillett. And you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And this alert as well, if you haven't seen the film and you want to see the film, you might not want to hear our conversation. Well, let's talk about Killmonger, and perhaps Ariel, for people who haven't seen it but need to know who this character is, who's Killmonger?
Killmonger is the T'Challa's
comic.
Yes, T'Challa's father is T'Chaka, and his brother N'Jobu. And N'Jobu was sent to the Americas, as they call them war dogs, and basically they're just kind of, they have spies throughout the country, as a country with resources would do. So, you know, they're keeping an eye out. And N'Jobu kind of goes off and sees the suffering of black people in America and is kind of developing his own agenda about like what he wants to do while he's there. Like he wants to liberate people. And so while he's there, he has falls in love with an American woman, has a child. That child, and I believe his name is N'Jaka is his actual name, but he grows up being Eric. What's his last name? Well, Killmonger is the name he's given in the while he's in the armed forces. Okay. I'm forgetting his last name, but he goes by a different name other than, you know, his royal Wakanda name. So everything he knows who he is. Like his father told him about Wakanda. So everything that he has done has been to get him in front of T'Challa to take over the throne. And so that's like that is his journey. And I like Killmonger is a complicated character. He's a complicated villain. You know, if you even want to call him a villain, like there are definitely one of my favorite villains just in just kind of comic book lore is Magneto, mm-hmm. because he is like his, the methods that he uses, you know, you can find deplorable, but you understand why he's doing it. For Magneto, it's like he is someone who has survived the Holocaust, who lost everything, and he didn't have the power to stop it then, but he has the power to stop something like that from happening now. So by any means, he's going to stop it. And so that's what I feel like for Killmonger. It's like, I am with him. It's mm-hmm. like everything that he said, it was like, that's true. And, you know, I have felt that way too. And now he is working to put himself in a place of power so he can change it. Now, do you agree with everything he did to get there? No, but you still, it's like, you're not mm-hmm. wrong. And so then that, you know, that's the challenge. So I struggle to even really call him a villain. He's just a different ideology who is, you know, at odds with our main character. But he's not truly like a villain, you know, in the sense like the Joker is a villain or something like that.
But he does, I mean, in a sense, he wants a race war. I mean, he wants to get, it feels that way.
I think he wants liberation.
Yeah, I didn't think of it as a race war. Unless there are no white people who want black people to be free. I mean, honestly, like, unless that's the truth. But actually, what I thought... Yeah, I mean, I think what, and I like the Magneto, that's what I was thinking, like when Professor X and Magneto work together, it's like, oh, you're so excited. Beautiful. Yeah, you really want that to happen. And I guess I thought he wanted to arm people to overthrow their oppressors. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's like, and you know, whether we think someone like Nat Turner was wrong for... leading a slave revolt. I mean, that just depends on how you think about how oppressed people should gain freedom. And I guess that's the question that the movie is positing.
Because Chala is essentially a rival of his.
Yeah, but if it's not like you have a character in T'Challa who's actually advocating for racial equality around the world. You actually have a character who it has, for the most part, grown up quite... Shelter. I mean, in Civil War, we see him and his father, sorry, Captain America, when we're introduced to his character, we see him advocating for change. But it's not this, he's not a character, he's not like a Martin Luther King character versus a Malcolm X character. That's not how T'Challa is actually presented to us in the film. We see him in some ways as deeply apolitical and a character who has to grow into political consciousness and is pushed into that by Killmonger on one hand and Nakia on the other. So it's not, and so that's why Killmonger, I think, is both fascinating, and I think why so many people empathize and also mm-hmm. see themselves in him. Because T'Challa is like he's like someone who we can't imagine, because that a figure like that doesn't exist. There's no one untouched by colonization, or few untouched by the transatlantic slave trade. So he's unreal. So then we're dealing with Killmonger, who has a legacy that is ours and that we're grappling with and that we're descendants of, and we're also, and he's also hip hop, which I think is another way. And Tanisha Ford rightly pointed out the ways in which Ruth Marcus adorns him and dresses him like Tupac, right? So there's just all this stuff that's going on with Killmonger. That's why, and then Michael B. Jordan. So.
Well, I was gonna say, and then there's Michael B. Jordan, who there are moments where I felt like he's in a sense stole the film. I mean, just he's so charismatic as an actor, but also this character as well.
Yeah, and I think that's their, and it's really different than Fantastic Four. Right. You know what I mean? Like what Michael B. Jordan and Ryan Coogler can do together is really pretty extraordinary. So.
Let me see what Clay from Philadelphia has to say. Clay, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning. How are you?
Good.
I loved the film. I thought the costume was great. I loved the scene where the woman didn't want to have the wig on. She thought it was an outrage. I love when she threw the wig off. No more weaves.
That's funny.
But the thing that kind of bothered me was the power sharing at the end. I'm just the kind of person who's like, you don't share your power, because eventually someone's going to come and try to take it from you. It's human nature. I was more like, instead of Nelson Mandela, you know, reconciliation, I guess I'm more in the Stephen Biko camp, where he kind of wanted to run people out of South Africa. I had a difficulty with the power sharing.
But what about
maybe because I'm an older guy, maybe I'm a little sexist.
You didn't want to share power with the women? Is that what you were saying, Clay?
No, exactly where I'm going.
Oh, you're going there. Wow.
I'm sorry, ladies.
I thought you were going in another direction.
I thought you were talking about the power sharing with the rest of the world. We're opening.
No. I'm sorry. At the end of the movie where he power shared the vibrating with the world. That's what I was talking about. That I was against that, the power sharing. Not, but with the woman guard. I guess I'm just an old sexist in that. I was wondering where are the men? Because I watch a lot of. I'm not talking about power sharing with the women. I agree with that. But I'm just wondering. If there's power sharing, where were the male guards?
Well, I mean, weren't they? Well, let me give Ariel a chance to respond. Clay, thanks for the call.
I mean, think about it. Again, there are a total of 5 tribes that make up Wakanda. And again, the Dora Milaje, the women guard, that is that particular tribe, and they are T'Challa's guard. They are part of I do believe that the Dora Milaje are picked from different tribes, but they are specifically there to protect the king. But if you think about Daniel Kaluuya's character, I'm always trying to make sure I'm pronouncing his name correctly. You know. Most, if not all, of their warriors were male. And then again, when the Jabari come down, Jabari. I'm still getting names to get.
You're way ahead of me on this. Yeah,
but when the Jabari come down, I mean, there were women because there was a woman there, and I was like, yeah. But those, the majority of their warriors are men. And then when you think about who's on the council, the Queen Mother's on the council, and the tribe leader, the woman who had the red kind of locked hairstyle. But I believe the other members of the council are male, so there are men participating in the mm-hmm. power structure, but there are women there too. I think to want there to be power but have that be centralized where the men are, I think is dangerous. I think that also doesn't speak to the kind of influence that and just impact that women have had on the safety of Black people in general, like all the work that women have done to help keep us safe as a people, no matter where we are. So again, to empower women and let women make decisions, I think, you know, works. It helps us all.
Clay, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Salamisha, anything you want to add to that? And
I mean, yeah, ultimately, you know, if there's a critique of the film, T'Challa doesn't have to be king. There could be a queen, right? Or we could have, like, you know, there's even deeper, like, we don't have to have a monarchy. We can have a democracy. Right? So, I mean, I guess I think the women are the royal guards and we have a king, and that's...
And also to point out, Nakia is from a different tribe. So you remember when they were, when they stripped T'Challa of his power and to allow other tribes to step forward to fight for the throne, Nakia was the challenger. So, you know, Nakia would have, and clearly the people who fight, they're the ones that become the monarch. So Nakia was the challenger, had her tribe decided that they wanted to fight for the crown. So it would have been a queen. So it's not even, it has to pass to a male hand in this culture. It could have gone to a woman depending on who the challenger was. Because even when Shuri raised her hand, you know, at first the response was like, is she really going to challenge her brother for the throne? Because she can, that is her right. Yeah. She doesn't need anybody's permission to do that. So I think that, again, just kind of speaks to the society and the equality of the sexes.
Mm-hmm. So, Misha, I ran across, I think it was an essay in the Times or Time Magazine, I'm not sure, a guy named Carvel Wallace. Mm-hmm. Can films like these change things for Black people in America? That was one of the questions that he had. You mentioned Daniel Kaluuya, who did Get Out, who's also featured in this film. Do you see this movie as part of a shift in filmmaking, either cast and crew, director's storyline?
Well, I mean, so over the last year, starting with Get Out to Girls Trip to Black Panther to Wrinkle in Time, we're seeing African-American filmmakers have either have hits that no one thought was going to be a hit, right, with Girls Trip and with Get Out, or you have a big budget given bigger budgets, larger budgets than ever, given to both Coogler and then DuVernay. So I think it marks a shift in American cinema. A colleague of mine, though, recently gave a talk, Daphne Brooks, a professor at Yale, and was still staying with me because you gave this talk on Saturday, you know, what does it mean to win the culture when the presidency, the Senate, and Congress are dominated by Republicans? So are we winning the culture war? I think but we're not winning the legislative. And so I think that's the time we're in. And that's a complex and contradictory. So I think the reason, and I was saying this to another friend of mine, you know, the euphoria, with all the complexities of the movie, with all the contradictions, with all the problems of Wakanda, the kind of uprightedness that people have gone to the movie theaters with and left with, I don't think people, and this is crazy because it doesn't even make sense. Maybe the day Barack Obama was elected president, right? That kind of like, ooh. You know, and you realize how disenfranchised emotionally and politically people of color and then black people have been feeling over the last year and a half. That this is a response to the kind of constant attack on black athletes, on black celebrities, on black people from the White House. And that's also that's what's also going on when people are just, you know, fall back is what's happening as well to those people.
We're almost out of time here, but Ariel, as someone who knows comic book and comic book characters, what do you anticipate is the next Black Panther movie?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, we have to get through Infinity War first. And after, you know, after watching Black Panther, I was like, now I'm ready to watch the Infinity War trailer. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of potential there. I think it also depends on, like, what actually happens in Infinity War, because maybe the next Black Panther will also be dealing with the fallout of that, because that is going to have major repercussions across the MCU. So, you know, as a comic book fan, you know, you're kind of thinking, like, it's like, well, let's not get ahead of ourselves, because first we have to get through this event, and then we'll see where you know, the chips fall. But I do, you know, I'm hopeful that Coogler will still be attached to it, because I just really do trust his vision. It's like he has not led us astray, and he knows how to tell a story. And I can't imagine this in anybody else's hands. So I guess my biggest hope is that he is still attached to the film, as well as the actors and everyone else who made that happen. I'm excited to see where it goes.
Well, my thanks to both of you for joining us today on Radio Times, talking about the Black Panther film. And again, that's Ariel Johnson, and she's owner of Amalgam Comics and Coffee House, which is in the Kensington section of Philadelphia. Salamisha Tillett is the Robert S. Blank Presidential Associate Professor of English and Africana Studies at the University of Pennsylvania, also co-founder of A Long Walk Home. And earlier in the hour, we spoke with brothers Dawood Enyawile and also Guy Sims about their comic book, Brother Man. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Trine Nuri. And we do want to close things out with another piece, another song from the movie, and this is Kendrick Lamar, SZA, All the Stars, song on Black Panther, the album.